move from item 6, and we are going to move into item 15 right now. And Mr. Harris, would you like to introduce this item?
Sure. I'd like to welcome Sandra Schubert, the Undersecretary for California Department of Food and Ag, to come up with her staff. They're going to give us a presentation on CDFA's fertilizer research and education program.
Hello. Hi, I'm Sandra Schubert. I'm the Undersecretary of Food and Ag, and I want to start by thanking all the board members, Chairman Young, Executive Officer Harris, for having us here today to talk a little bit about some of the stuff CDFA has been doing through its fertilizer research and education project that overlaps on a lot of the water quality issues that you guys are working with, specifically nitrogen management issues and different fertilizing materials. During my tenure with this administration, one of the things that I found most fulfilling is the governor's instruction to different agencies to get rid of silos and to work in coordination and collaboration and capitalize on everybody's expertise. You and your staff have expertise on certain water quality issues. CDFA and our experts, Dr. Mon here, have significant agronomic expertise. And we have found, working closely with the State Board in the Central Valley and with your board, that when we work in a collaborative fashion, that things come out better in the end. We may not always agree, but we share information better, we learn better. These are very complex systems that we're addressing, agronomic systems. You pull a thread here and you unravel something there. The same with the underlying economic and cultural systems that are affected by these decisions. But I'm very heartened by the conversations and the collaboration, and I think through that we'll come to the goals we all have of safe drinking water for folks while maintaining the vital place that agriculture has in California and coming out with better and more effective, more efficient regulations for everybody on all sides that gets results that you guys need and makes the stakeholders feel as though they're participating in a valuable way for the process. So I just want to thank you and your Ken Harris especially for working with us and sitting down and talking with us. I want you to know that Food and Ag and the folks that I work with on these issues greatly appreciate it. I want to introduce Dr. Asif Mon. I'm only going to say a couple words. He is really the lead person on most of what we've been doing around this stuff. He oversees, and I always get the name of this wrong, our feed, fertilizer, and livestock drugs regulatory programs. Part of that is our fertilizer research and education program, but he oversees our registration of fertilizing materials and making sure that they're what they're supposed to be, both conventional and organic. He oversees our livestock drug programs. He's been with CDFA for over 20 years, nearly 25. He's done management, science, a variety of different activities for us. And I'm telling you all this because I want to extend myself and Dr. Mon and his staff, you know, in a formal way to you guys. If you want to talk, pick up the phone and call us. But Dr. Mon has both a BS, an MS, and a PhD in agronomy. There are very few people I know that know nearly as much on this as Asif. There might be one other person at work that we could hold up next to him. But he's got 50 people working for him. They have a lot of expertise, so you guys should feel free if you have questions, you want to talk through issues, board members, staff, please do reach out to us. And I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Mon, and thank you very much.
Thank you for making him available to us. Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, member of the board, and Mr. Harris. Thanks for the opportunity. Thank you so much. I'm not as good as you described, but okay. My presentation is going to give you background on fertilizer research education program and some functions which we perform, and also the 22 years of FREP, what we have done, where we want to go, and that would be the initiatives. I have quite a few slides, so bear with me. We'll go through this quickly. As you all remember, or maybe most of you remember, there was a nitrate working group which was established by CDFA in 1988 to study the nitrate issue in the groundwater, and they produced a report in 1989 which identified areas of a high level of nitrogen in the state, and which is mainly in the Tulare Lake Basin and the coastal area and some in south. And as a result of this report and through CDFA effort and the fertilizer industry, fertilizer research education program was established in 1990. And the funding comes from the fertilizer industry through mill assessment. And mill assessment is on the dollar sale value of the fertilizer product. 20 years later, there's another report from UC Davis, and that has similar findings to 1989 in many ways. They have identified the same areas which were identified in 1989, have a high level of nitrate, and they have identified that agriculture is the large contributor to nitrate in groundwater. And they made a very good suggestion, some promising options. One of the options, which was very practical, and that was pump and fertilize. And pump and fertilize concept is that there is inherent nitrate in the groundwater, and if you can take that into account while you're doing your nitrogen budget, how that works. So I will talk about that a little bit later in detail. But there's an interesting chart in that report, and I'm sure you all have seen it. And that chart describes the cropland area and the manure nitrogen, total fertilizer nitrogen, and the harvested nitrogen over a period of time starting from 1940 to 2010. But if you notice, the last 20 years, the cropland area has flattened. It's not going up. And that red line, which is manure nitrogen and fertilizer nitrogen, that still keeps on going. It's increasing. But the interesting part which you will see is the line below the red, which is either black or gray, the commercial fertilizer use has slowed down and flattened as well within the last 20 years. But the manure, which is the bottom line, is going up, manure use. Another interesting point is the green bars which you have, those are the harvested nitrogen. So harvested nitrogen is also going up, which shows that there is efficiency which is being utilized. The land use is flattened, the commercial fertilizer use is flattened, but the harvested nitrogen is still going up.
Ask a question.
Sure.
The harvested nitrate is use of groundwater that has nitrate in it?
The harvested nitrogen is the crop nitrogen which is being harvested and recovered from the applied nitrogen.
Okay.
Within the last 22 years of FRAP, we have expended over $12 million, over 160 projects. And majority of those projects, as you can see from the chart, was on fertilization and irrigation practices. Because if you can improve the fertilization and irrigation practices, you can minimize the nitrate loading of groundwater. So that's where our focus has been. And the commodity-wise, the major commodities which are grown in the state, especially in those risk areas, were addressed. And regional-wise, the majority funds obviously went to Central Valley. That's where the bigger agriculture is. But the coastal also got a fair share of the funds for research. The funding, as I mentioned, is through mill assessment. And by law, it can go up to one mill. And currently, we are at one mill. And depending on the dollar sale value and the market prices of the fertilizer, our revenue fluctuates. But at the current prices, we estimate it generates about $2 million. And majority of that fund, $2 million, is allocated towards research and education. Our functions, there are three broad areas where we focus: technical education, research, and education and outreach. The technical education is for user of fertilizing materials in developing and implementing nutrient management plans. And the research generates that information through basic research or applied research, which can be used for technical education. And we also focus on education and outreach. You might have noticed from my charts previously in 22 years, 14% of our effort was on outreach and education. But for the last year and a half under the new administration, our focus is more on technical education and outreach because we have a wealth of information already through research, but we need to take this out and share with the practitioners, CCAs, the growers, and the farm advisors so they can utilize that at the ground level. Our initiatives. Since, as I mentioned, we have a wealth of data, 160 projects, and we have research which we can share. So we have developed a tool, accessibility of research through web-based research database. And I'm going to show you how that works. And focus on research. Our research is more focused and partly would be pump and fertilizer, and that is a new area which we are going into, that how whether that 1 pound of nitrogen in groundwater equates to 1 pint of nitrogen in commercial fertilizer. So that's a proof of concept which we are going to look into. We have applied for USDA NRCS grant for a practical application of a demonstration of these projects, and we are focusing on technical education and outreach, and I'm going to go in more detail on the technical education part. Accessibility of the data. The old way, we had website, and we have listed all the projects which are completed, and anybody could go and look at those project reports. And those project reports are written by scientists and research, very technical in nature, and some of those reports could be 40 pages long. And so one can tell that how much interest a grower or a crop practitioner would have reading through that report. So what we have done is the new way. We have created a database. We have taken that research which we have synthesized into more common language which can be understandable, and put in a very succinct format. It's a searchable database. It's up and running. And we kept our search criteria very simple. There are the keywords which can be used, type of crop if you are looking for, or if you are looking for a range of the when the research was done, or if somebody is looking for a particular county. So it could be either any of those or a combination of those search criteria. For example, if we look for nitrate and all the reports which are done on nitrate will come up, we kept it very simple in three columns. That is the title of research and where it was done and what crop it was done. So the selection will be much easier. If we select this one, then this report will come up. And this is a one-pager which gives who was the what is the project highlight, where it was done. But at the same time, we have all other information on the sidebar. If they want to go and look at the original report, they can still go from here and look at the original report. In the second phase, what we are doing is we are developing fertilization guidelines, and those we have focused on 10 crops, 10 major crops in the Central Valley and at the coast as well. And I'm going to try this. If it works, I'm going to give a demonstration. It's not live, but let's see how it works. Come up. Come on. Please. Don't fail me. It's doing something, but it's not coming up. No, actually, I'm not going online. I have a slide which I could use to link my PowerPoint with that. I tried it last night. It worked. It's taking longer time than I anticipated. So,
well, doesn't he need the passcode, Jessica, to get into the?
It's not online. It's a simulation.
It's a simulation.
Calling us all.
Yeah. Okay. It's not coming up.
Well, that's while we're waiting for that, I have a question for you. I was looking at that map that you first put up at the beginning, and it showed impacts from nitrates and nitrogen, and shows the Salinas, it shows the San Joaquin Valley and some others. But what was missing was the Sacramento Valley.
Yeah, that was in 89, and I don't think they were focused at Sacramento at that time.
Okay.
So mainly they were looking in the Salinas Valley and coast and, of course, the southern areas. Yeah. It's not coming up, so I should probably move on. So without the benefit of having the demonstration, but I can tell you, we are creating a interactive website for major crops, including lettuce and broccoli and all others which are grown in this region. And one can go and get information not only when to apply fertilizer, but also what to apply and how to apply and all those 4 R's. But in addition, what we are doing is we are promoting soil testing, petiole testing, and irrigation water testing. But through this, our website, they would know how to take a soil sample, how to interpret the soil sample results, and the same way the plant tissue. So it is a kind of a one-stop shop kind of hub where they can not only find out that when to apply fertilizer, how much to apply, and what kind of fertilizers are available, and what kind of irrigation, but they would have other tools as well. And we are also including other links which may be useful for further information on that particular crop, so far as the nutrients are concerned. And our website will not focus only on nitrogen, but it will be P and K as well, so it's a complete major nutrients, NPK, because they won't work in sync.
So in the short time I've been here, one of the things that I keep hearing from growers is that the application timing of fertilizers is a trade secret. But what you're proposing is scientifically based application of fertilizer, which would be amount and timing, you know, in the context of what's already in the soil, what's already in the water. So how do we get the farmers to accept what you've done in the competitive environment that they're in? And their concern is, well, if I follow CDFA's guidelines, my neighbor is going to put twice as much on and, you know, he's going to get to market faster or whatever. How do we deal with that that's out there?
The guidelines are based on the research, as you mentioned, and that will give it general guidelines, but there are going to be variation which would be site-specific and also based on the kind of crop and the soil type, and we are taking that into account. And so far as making them accountable, that's more of a regulatory issue.
I think it's important that what they're putting together are guidelines. They're not mandates.
No.
I've seen it's unfortunate that Dr. Mon can't bring it up, but you get questions, and you sort of go through. It's a way to make farmers who may not be thinking of this how to take a lot of the information out there and apply it on their crop. It doesn't say, though. It'll say the best time to apply tends to be now. It doesn't say on day 14 of the crop you will apply 1.5 pounds. So it still gives farmers some of the discretion to do their own personal whatever they want to do. In addition, a lot of farmers, they have their own special fertilizer mix too, right?
Yeah.
So the way they use, they may do compost and fertilizer and a variety of other things. So all those variations are different on each farm. That's why we say a lot, it is really complex.
Yeah.
What you're growing, how you're growing it, where you're growing it, what you're using, synthetic, compost, organic green waste, all of that. A small change on one farm next door to another can affect the way they're applying nitrogen and how much they're using.
Do you think, do you have the trust of the ag community when it comes to this research? I mean, when they look at your stuff, do you think they believe what you've put up and are willing to, and do you think, and do you have any kind of evidence that they're following your advice?
They are not up yet, but what we have done is actually while we were developing, we had stakeholders meeting, we had meeting with the growers, grower groups as well, and the certified crop advisors, and I've spoken to all those to get feedback before we go get too deep into this. They are looking forward to a site like this, which we have, and it is up, and I can show you, where they can not only, they know what their crop is. They know what kind of fertilizer they're using. We need to guide them that how best to manage your fertilizers and what are the other factors they need to consider while they are budgeting their nitrogen, which would be the soil nitrogen already and the irrigation water nitrogen and the actual timing of application. For example, in this case, pre-plant nitrogen, and we are saying you don't need pre-plant because that is not going to help your plant. So don't apply any nitrogen pre-plant, but you do need to have a starter nitrogen, and that's what you need to consider. And you need to get your soil test done at this stage so that you know how much inherent nitrogen is there, which is available to the plant, and how much you need to apply. And so how to interpret the soil nitrate samples. So it's very interactive site. As you can see, you move over these, and then you will get more information, more of application, because that is one thing which we need to educate more people. How to apply? What is the best method? How can you keep your nitrogen within the root zone and apply at the amount which will be available to the plant at that time, so that you can avoid the loading of nitrate into groundwater? What type of fertilizer you should use for certain crops?
Doctor, I have a follow-up question based on what you just said, and you tied this back into groundwater protection.
Yeah.
So when you speak of fertilizer guidelines and efficiency, is this geared towards maximizing plant production, biomass production? And which I'm sure it does, but how does it take into consideration protection of groundwater? Because that's what we're really focused on here, is protecting groundwater from excess nitrogen leaching down.
And that is our focus as well, but at the same time, you need to have economic production of the crops as well. So we need to strike a balance, and that's what this site will do. That how best you can achieve your yield goals without contaminating the groundwater. That is the whole purpose, that you can achieve your yield goals but still protect the environment.
So does that mean that your guidelines should prevent leaching of nitrogen into groundwater?
My guidelines, through all these various tools which we have developed, soil testing, which they need to do, irrigation water and plant tissue and right amount, that will help mitigate the down nitrate loading of groundwater.
Okay.
Chairman Young?
Yes.
Maybe I think so. Hopefully someday we'll get to a lot of what FREP is doing when he says proof of concept and stuff. We're trying to see when he talks about is a pound of nitrogen in water the same as a pound of nitrogen fertilizer, so that when we're talking to farmers, and it's going to vary. We have 81,500 farms. Some are an acre. Some are hundreds of acres, different levels of expertise and, you know, involvement. But so that we can tell them, actually, a pound in the water, it's only 75% of a pound in the nitrogen. It's about, with 400 different commodities, it's not like Nebraska. They've got 11 crops, one biome, right? It's easy to put guidelines out in the state of Nebraska. And by the way, 8 or 9 of those crops are sorghum, wheat, and corn, right? So it's easier to develop those guidelines because 5 different biomes, 400 crops, 81,000 farms, it's so much more complex. It's not as easy, and that's why you end up with guidelines that take into all these considerations. But the better farming and agronomic practices we have, you will minimize nitrate loading to groundwater. And that is the only way. You've got to minimize it getting into the groundwater to prevent future nitrogen increasing. So we have to get to a place. We think farmers have made significant improvements, but we can do better. And what CDFA wants to do is, with our programs, whatever we can do to help farmers do better, get technical assistance out there, focus research where we most need it, such as Central Coast and Central Valley and some of the things that have come out. So at this point, I don't think we can say that if you use all our guidelines, you'll have one-to-one application rates.
No.
We just don't have enough information.
No, we don't actually, and that will vary. And thank you so much for explaining on it.
One more board question.
Sure.
Probably, hopefully, for clarification on this.
Just for clarification, following up on what Chair Young was saying, it's a question. I think your question was, well, what is the optimal when you're trying to develop guidelines for optimal use? What's the definition of optimum? And I could see a couple of different definitions. I could see farmers wanting a definition that says, what is the minimum amount of nitrate that I can apply? Nitrogen's expensive. What's the minimum amount of nitrate I can apply to get maximum yield, or to balance my nitrogen input with yield, so I'm not spending the last dollar to get 2 cents more yield, right? That's one definition of optimum. And what I was hearing from Chair Young is, well, there's a different definition of optimum, which says, how do I apply nitrogen so that I minimize what goes below the root zone? And I hear you saying you're seeking a balance, but those are two very different, not always contradictory, but different sets of goals.
These are different set of goals, but they can be achieved by better management of the nitrogen, and that's what we are trying to do, and that's what I'm trying to explain. That instead of, for example, your crop needs are 200 pounds, and the general practice may be do only one application at the front end and then not do anything else, and you know where that nitrogen is going to go. What we are trying to educate through these technical tools is that there is a better way of managing your nitrogen without compromising your yield, and that will be environmental benefit. For example, do split application. Don't apply all that. Plant doesn't need and cannot take it up at that stage. Depending on the growth stage, that's where you budget your nitrogen. And if they can budget their nitrogen better, taken into account other nitrogen sources which they have in soil and plant and in groundwater, they will minimize the use of additional nitrogen. And if they can minimize that additional nitrogen and apply at the right time, the right dose, then there are all opportunities that it is not going to move too much from the root zone. But that other factor which we are missing over here is the irrigation. Fertilizer you apply, and if you don't manage your irrigation water, then there are more possibilities that the nitrate is going to move down. And I have another initiative which I'm going to talk about. We are promoting that as well, and outreach, because fertilizing and irrigation, they need to go hand in hand.
Dr. Hunter?
Sorry, I have two questions. And I think I'll start with the second one. We understand that, at least I think I understand, that in the nation, we have some of the highest application rates of nitrogen. And I think that came out in the SB2X1 report, UC Davis report. And that accounts for some of the high productivity and the enormous economic kind of, you know, strength of the ag industry in California. Also the diversity of, you know, the soils and the water and mm-hmm. so forth. So we have this, you know, incredible combination of natural resources as well as technology that has yielded this great economic benefit to the state. A part of that is, to my way of thinking, the high use of nitrogen to increase yield. So what I'm hearing from you is that there's a more efficient way to approach the farming practices that could actually reduce nitrate but maintain yield. And in maintaining yield, I would think that farmers are also thinking about increasing yield. So, you know, it seems like a big leap to me that they're going to consider the risk of following a new practice until it's been demonstrated, until they see it actually happening in the field and actually happening within their crop type. My second point then kind of links into that, and it takes us back to the earlier statement about how do we know that farmers are going to use these guidelines. And so my question to you, Ms. Schubert and Dr. Mann, what is the relationship with food and ag with the farm industry? Do you have a strong relationship? Do you have strong stakeholder connections where you've seen your programs over time actually begin to help shift the culture, help shift the technological understanding of efficiency and the benefits, cost benefits, hopefully, in changing irrigation practices, in changing the commercial fertilizer application where there's tremendous cost, et cetera? I mean, do you have a good background or a good basis in which to move this education and outreach? Because I'm not familiar with food and ag and how well the industry works with food and ag.
Well, I like to think we have a very good relationship with ag. We actually do have a good relationship with ag. I think, you know, one of the advantages of CDFA is we're not seen, by and large, as a regulatory agency. So we don't regulate water. We're expert advisors. We're sister agencies. We work with other agencies. So we have the ability to, I think, moderate sometimes in a way that's effective. We can hear both sides. We're less emotional in that way. We've been food and ag for, was it 1930s yeah. or 40s when it was established. So there is a long history of working closely with ag. And I know I've worked on ag issues about 20 years. And I can say over that 20 years, and I've seen changes in the last couple years. You know, I want to comment, you talked about the economic driver of ag. It's not just an economic driver. We are going to have to feed 9 billion people in 2050. We are going to have to produce as much food in the next 50 years as we have in the last 10,000 years combined. One out of every six people is hungry on a daily basis. That's internationally. One out of every eight children in the Central Valley is hungry. So this isn't just about the economy. We're one of five Mediterranean growing regions in the world. I personally feel that California has a moral obligation because of that to try to figure out we're going to have to do more with less for a variety of reasons. We see climate change coming, resources are getting less. So what we're trying to do is, and I think we've got really good relationships with ag, and we've been doing it in water and climate and air and a variety of other areas, is try to focus on where our needs are and what information do we need, how can we get it out to ag, how can we work with our sister agencies and understand your needs. So, you know, we know you need data or access to data. We understand that for farmers, how they farm is considered confidential business information. How can we be helpful in a conversation with you in getting you data or access to data you need, and how can we work with farmers so that they're comfortable with that? Sometimes not being the regulated party or the regulator is a very helpful role to be in. And I, you know, you can ask your staff. We've done some meetings and tours. I think they've been helpful. We've had staff is starting to sit down on a regular basis. I felt that those meetings were helpful. We translate stuff back to agriculture. Ag will say that they know they're part of the problem and that, you know, different people will say they can approve more or less. It does depend on crops. So you have the almond industry is very, it's organized and it's got a structure. So, and almonds are very similar. Leafy greens are very disparate and less organized. So you probably have more focused research and more money going in for almonds than you probably do for all the varieties of leafy greens. So some of it depends on those type of circumstances. We meet with ag on a regular basis. They're on our technical advisory committee, fertilizer advisory boards. We have technical advisory groups. I speak to ag every day. I know that OSF does and all the members. So I do think we've been really successful in moving things forward. But I also think ag's moving forward on its own. Yeah. I really do. They did. I think that chart that Dr. Mann showed, I'd like to emphasize, synthetic fertilizer use leveled off, harvest went up. They did all of that voluntarily.
Yeah. And what we are doing is we are
Dr. Wolf is going to ask a follow-up question, and then we'll get right back to you.
Sure.
Yeah, so maybe my question is premature to your presentation, but it seems what you're presenting here is not the sole focus of application of fertilizer, but you're looking at a holistic approach to it, yeah. Meaning measurement, verification,
sure.
Plant material sampling, soil sampling, fertigation techniques. You alluded to fertilizer, to irrigation. Irrigation technology is changing significantly and can have a major impact both on water quality and water quantity, very importantly. So it sounds like what you're trying to do is, when you call it a one-stop shop, it's not only in terms of accessing the information, but also the techniques and the tools, the toolbox available,
yeah.
in how to use the fertilizer. And then my last question to you is that, and this ties a little bit with Chairman Young's question, is the economics aspect, mm-hmm. because there's basically that threshold where you're looking at the economics is not only the production side, it's also the fertilizer cost.
Yes.
And I would suggest that part of the leveling off, there is a tie to the cost of fertilizer. And this has been shown in Europe,
yeah.
where with the increased cost of fertilizer through various means of taxation, et cetera, there is a more judicious application. So there is that economics pressure. And then the other one is that there is a monetary value to environmental impact, and which is measurable too.
Very well said, Dr. Wolf.
Thank you.
And that's the intention, and I really appreciate your comment, what we are trying to accomplish. And I wish if I could go through my PowerPoint, because there are other factors and aspects, not only this one website, because that's a tool which we are providing, and the toolbox. And I can just show you that how much research we have done, looked at various research to come up with these guidelines, how much work has gone into this. And these are the links, and there's one tool which you just mentioned, Crop Manage, which is developed here in Salinas Valley through our research, is one of the tools which can be used to manage your nitrogen. My focus is that how best we can take this research and a message to the growers at the practical level so they can better manage their nitrogen, stay economical, but at the same time be mindful and be contributed to environmental protection. That's the ultimate goal.
I should have warned you that this is a very engaged board and they're going to ask lots of questions.
No,
so
I agree.
I apologize for not warning you ahead of time.
Questions are good, but let's see what else I have to present. Okay, if I can get back to my PowerPoint, okay. So this is one thing which we are doing, which is creating an interactive website and which can be used by crop advisors, farm advisors, and the growers as well. What we are doing is we also did three sessions of fertilizer research and education program special request proposal. As I said, our normal RFP is we get out the RFP in December, and then we get the concept proposals, then we review those through our technical advisory subcommittee and select certain projects which are promising, and they will submit a full proposal. And it will go through the peer review and also technical advisory subcommittee, and then the recommendations will be made to the Fertilizer Inspection Advisory Board, which will do a further review and then make recommendation to the Secretary for funding. It's a very engaging, involved, and technical process. Based on the report which came out from UC Davis and, as I mentioned, pump and fertilizer concept, so out of the norm, we did this special RFP in a short, compressed time period, and we got six project proposals for that special RFP. And out of those, two proposals were selected and funded. One proposal is in the Central Valley Trail Lake Basin, and the other one here in Salinas Valley. And both of these projects are from UC Extension as well. Our normal funding is $75,000 per year, up to 3 years, $225,000, but you can see that we went beyond our normal funding, and this is over $700,000 project. And we are expecting at a ground level reality about the pump and fertilizer, nitrogen management, and also we are going to look into, through these research, the nitrate movement beyond root zone, what happens. So we have a good team of agronomists, hydrologists, soil scientists working on this project, and this is at the field level. In the Central Valley would be almonds and pistachios, and the Salinas Valley would be lettuce and broccoli. And I'm expecting good results from this, but it will take 3 years before we have the results.
Could you share with us what those proposals in the Salinas Valley are going to be looking at specifically?
The Salinas Valley would be looking at the pump and fertilizer concept, proof of concept, but also nitrogen budgeting and also the movement of nitrogen beyond the root zone. Dr. Smith, Dr. Kahn, and Dr. Harter, and working in lettuce and broccoli, and Dr. Tom Harter and Patrick Brown, and a couple of other soil scientists working in almond and pistachios area. Our research priorities, we looked at our research priorities, what we have done in the past, and where should we go and focus, considering taking the holistic approach, as Dr. Wolf mentioned. So demonstration, agronomically sound use of fertilizing materials at the field level. And as it was mentioned by Ms. Hunter, that at the field level, can we demonstrate this? Now we have a research. Can we demonstrate the benefit of it, of managing your nitrogen and how it is benefiting the groundwater contamination? And the second focus is managing agriculture nitrogen, which is actually further research. We will identify some gaps through our research and then try to fill those gaps. How can we minimize nitrate movement below the root zone? More research needs to be done. Evaluate strategies in increasing crop nitrogen use efficiency. That will help minimize the fertilizer use. Minimizing nitrogen oxide, nitrous oxide emission. We are not looking at the ground, but we are looking at the air quality as well. And also developing best management practices that would be useful and demonstrated. Development of educational material. That's part of what I'm sharing, but we need to develop more and outreach. How can we outreach to the grower agriculture community and have them adopt these practices? So that's where our focus is going to be. I'm going backward. Okay. Technical education, I mentioned fertigation. Recently, we funded a project with CSU Fresno with Center of Irrigation Technology, and we wanted them to develop some tools for the growers, and they have done and have through series of seminars. They are going to be talking to the certified crop advisors and the growers, and the first seminar was on May 16th, which I went down to attend and see how it is being handled and distributed the information. So they emphasize on the right equipment, right amount of water and fertilizer, and uniform distribution, because that's also a key factor, the uniform distribution. If you don't have a uniform distribution, you may be adding more nitrate here through your irrigation water than over there. So it's not good for the environment. It's not good for the crop either. And how much, how long, and how often you need to irrigate and fertilize. So that is the focus. How long, how often, how much? And then presentation and demonstration. So they have this mobile lab, if you like, and they have all the equipment in there for fertigation and showing, here's the fertilizer tank, and they have a pull-down. I was impressed. They were pull-down screen, and they were doing the PowerPoint, but at the same time, hands-on demonstration of how the fertigation should work and how to make sure how much, how long, and the distribution. So that's one thing which we are working on.
Does soil type play into this formula? Soil type?
Form of soil, that's very important. Thank you so much. Sandy loam soil versus clay soils are going to behave differently with the nitrate and also with the irrigation water. Yes.
Are there any plans to take this kind of on the road? I mean, not all growers, you know, they're busy people. They can't.
They are going to do initially 4 in the valley, in the San Joaquin Valley at various locations. They are going to translate this into 2 additional local languages. So we are trying to reach out to the growers. And so not only the fertilizer, but also the irrigation part.
So the Central Valley, but what about bringing it over here to the Central
Coast? I knew that you will ask that.
We don't want to be ignored.
Yeah. We just started it. Let's see how it goes. What is the reception? What is the fine-tuning we need to do? And then definitely I'll talk to CSU Fresno, and they were definitely going to ask me for more funding. that's a good idea, and we will consider it.
Yeah, if I could add, I noted in the UC Davis study that it was widely acknowledged that the Salinas Valley has had far less research conducted compared to Tulare. So we were hoping that out of that report and the recommendations that that would kind of elevate the need to bring the Salinas into some kind of equity with the knowledge and the understanding of it, because they've gained so much from the research they've done, and I understand that, you know, the ag industry and the ag groups there have been very engaged, and I think that's another element of this in conducting this research, is that it helps to open up, if you will, what are the issues and how research addresses the questions mm-hmm. that farmers have, mm-hmm. what kinds of techniques and tools are available in this particular point in time, which is another feature of what changes are possible.
A lot of what the FREP program and Dr. Mann have done is in an effort to sort of address all these larger scale issues you're talking about. The special RFP is both, it was specifically said to be Central Valley and Central Coast. Other areas were not solicited for proposals. So, but we do have a very scientific technical process. Some people write better proposals than others. And we can have certain conversations with folks, but we can't write their proposals for them. We can give them feedback. You guys understand that. So UC is CSU. They've got a lot of good experience in writing these proposals, which is why they have some of this stuff. So we welcome more proposals from anyone who wants to work in the Central Coast. That's not a problem for us. We do want to look in the areas where we're seeing some of the greatest pressures.
Yeah. If I may just add a quick comment, is that it would be a great synergy, I think, with some of your RCD's mobile irrigation labs with what you have done there for CSU.
Okay. Thank you. A disclaimer, it's not a flow chart, what I'm showing. but it is just a diagram to understand how complex this issue is and what are the various agencies, entities, are trying to address this issue. So nitrate nitrogen is in the center of this issue. And then we have, of course, regional water boards, and then there are regulatory requirements like you. And then here's CDFA FREP, and we are trying to address that issue through research, and research is done through these entities. And then there are also entities which are interested in regulating the drinking water. And then there are nutrient management plans which are required by the regional water boards. And then there are water coalitions which are playing a role more in the Central Valley. And here is the farmer who is being looked at from all of us, okay, do something to address this issue. Okay. The farmer, the cropping pattern, regional influences, as Sandy Schubert mentioned, That play in a role, soil type, regional influences, crop type, genotypes. Those are all kind of factors which farmer has to consider. Then the new technologies out there which farmer can use, and then there's the professional experts out there, farm advisors, certified crop advisors, and others like this, which can help farmer to better manage the nitrogen. What can FREP do? What FREP is doing is our third approach is we are developing a technical education outreach tool working with UC Davis, UC actually ANR, not UC Davis, UC as a whole, and CSU as well, and developing a curriculum for nitrogen management. And we are focusing on certified crop advisors, which can help the grower. Why did we choose the certified crop advisors? They are already gone through some level of testing, and there's a baseline knowledge which has been established through American Society of Agronomy and through California CCA program. And they take a test, and they are certified to advise the growers and the farmers for crop management. Where we fit in very focused on nitrogen management. And that's the curriculum which we are developing. And I will, it's a partnership between UCANR, FREP, and also CCA, Certified Crop Advisor Board. There are over 700 CCAs, so we want to utilize all those 700 which are out there close to the grower and knowledgeable about the local conditions and local crop, and we want to train them how to better manage the nitrogen. I mentioned the purpose, that's what we are doing, and the partnership I mentioned with CDFA, UCANR, Certified Crop Advisors, and we are also going to utilize CAPCA, California Association of Pest Control Advisors. CAPCA is the administrative body for CCA program in California, and they have the record of all those CCAs which take exam and they take continuous education units. So we are going to utilize them, their information, to train CCAs and keep track of who is being trained and how many continuous education units they need to maintain that training. We started this concept way back in October 2012. Actually, before that, the concept was vetted internally with the executive office, and then we met with CCA board and also the growers. And then I met in October with UCANR, and they invited me to speak to the President's Advisory Committee. So this was discussed over there. Then we formed a steering committee, which I will show you who are on the steering committee. We have already met five times. We have developed curriculum committees. We have identified about 50 experts within the CSU and UC system who can contribute towards that training program. We have this is the steering committee. UCNR people are there, and some familiar names you will see. They are there, experts in their own right, in their own area, from CDFA, myself and my staff, and from CCA representative as well. We are planning to have at least three in the Central Valley and one or two in Salinas Valley, those training sessions. We will increase those. We will increase those. We will learn. We will adjust. We are flexible.
Okay. We're pushing to the two, not one or two, two. Yeah. Two or
your
three.
Staff did also. Monica, she went to our stakeholders. She pushed as well for two. So. Okay. It's going to be a two-day program. It's very comprehensive, involved. We struggle with this, how long, what should be the proper length for this training. If we want to make it a real meaningful, we came up that it has to be at least a day and a half and maybe two. So we have 2 days. The day one is going to be general session, and I will give you details what will be covered in day one, and day two is going to be concurrent sessions based on the annual crops and the permanent crops, because they are very different in nature and different management practices needed. So we wanted to have more focused attention paid on the second day. For day one, the first module would be objectives of the course, and that would be objectives are how to do environmental stewardship and maintaining the crop production at the same time and feed the world. Yes. And nitrogen cycle, and we debated this, Dr. Wolf, so much. We said, okay, nitrogen cycle is so basic, and they should have probably learned this in school. But we want to take a different approach on nitrogen cycle. We want to study the nitrogen cycle, and in crop production systems, in each system, it may behave differently. With your source of nitrogen, it's going to be different, organic versus commercial, and all this. So we are going to focus on that. Dr. Patrick Brown is going to take lead on that. And nitrogen sources, what are the various nitrogen sources they can use, and what are appropriate sources for a certain crop in certain area, in certain soil type. So we'll focus on that. Irrigation and nitrogen management. As I mentioned earlier on, it's not only about the nutrients, nitrogen, it is about the irrigation. So we want to discuss both irrigation and nitrogen management, how best to manage both factors. Nitrogen budgeting, and that's where we will focus more. How best to manage your nitrogen? What are the various factors? I'm repeating myself. Nitrogen in your soil, nitrogen in your water, nitrogen in your plant needs. So how to take those all into account, and source of fertilizer, time of fertilizer, and create a nitrogen budget. And the future resources and would be what are the other tools which they can use which are not available through FREP but they are developed by other entities, other agencies, what they can use in future after this training. The second day would be a breakout session, concurrent sessions, and those will focus more on annual crop and permanent crops. And the use of BMPs would be the focus in each type of crops. Nitrogen management planning exercise would be given to them. That would be, after all this, okay, we'll give them scenarios. We'll break them into smaller groups, give them a scenario, and have them work on it, create a nitrogen management plan. So they can get out of this academic part of and then practical part of the training through this session. The annual crops... The coastal liaison is Dr. Hartz. I think you are familiar with this. And then permanent crop is Dr. Patrick Brown is taking the lead. What is our timeline? What was the process? As I mentioned earlier on, we developed this concept, went through the review at the executive office, got approved by the secretary. We have a statutory body, Fertilizer Inspection Advisory Board. So I took it to the Fertilizer Inspection Advisory Board, got their approval. Then I went to CCA Board, and I went to their annual conference. I wanted to get feedback from CCAs. How do they feel about this? Got good positive feedback. Then I went to speak to Central Valley Regional Water Board, as I'm doing it over here. And I went to UC President Action Committee, getting the academic perspective on this. And then UC Extension Conference, which I attended and made this presentation. So earlier on, there was a lot of outreach and feedback which I wanted to get from before we move too much into this. We have done that. Then curriculum development, that's where we are at this time. And as I mentioned, we have identified the various modules. We have identified the potential experts, and we have contacted them. They are working on it. And then the training would be who and when and where. That's where we are doing. And I'll take into account two in Salinas. And we are going to, one thing, this is important. We are going to develop some kind of continuous education units. What would be the requirement for these CCAs once they go through our training to maintain that training? What are the other areas they need to continue getting education units as a requirement to maintain their not only our training but also CCA certification. Stakeholders' feedback. So in addition to what we did over here, we created a stakeholders group, and there were invited staff members from this board as well. and to share what we are doing, and in more detail the modules, not as much as I've given you, more details in each module, which we wanted to get some feedback. And we got good feedback, and this was on April 25th, and we did that. And we want to call that stakeholders group back and maybe in September when we have a little bit more outline on the curriculum so we can bounce it off of them in September before we finalize it. As I mentioned, we are flexible, we listen, we adjust, and we make the product better. Implementation. Curriculum development, our goal is to develop that by October 2012. Then November and December, we will be just editing it, polishing it, making it relevant to the training program. And the training begins in January 2014. And our goal is to complete all those three, five sessions within from January to March and April. Because after that, CCAs are going to get busy, growers are going to get busy, actually. So we want to take advantage of that slow time in the early part of the year. Logistics will be done by CAPCA, but the actual training will be done by the experts from CSU and UC and other experts in the area. Once the training is done, CAPCA will provide us the list, and then we will issue a certificate. We will not be certifying them that they are expert. We will be issuing a certificate they've attended our training. So I don't want to certify anybody that they are expert and go and do the nitrogen management. We will certify that they went through our training successfully. With that,
I just wanted to point out on the training. So this was an attempt to be responsive to needs we've heard from the regional boards, the state boards, and farmers and growers. So in the East San Joaquin waste discharge requirement, it's different than your Central Coast Ag Order. They require CCAs to certify nitrogen management plans. They've also left it open for other training programs to be developed, whether by grower groups. They've asked us if at a later date we would develop training, individual training for farmers, and we are interested in that. It's a matter of capacity and funding and stuff. So it was our attempt to be responsive to what we see as new needs. It's a team, right? We're all on the field, and you guys have your roles, and this is our role, and we're never going to win the game unless we're all actually working on this together in a coordinated way. So I really want to commend Dr. Mann and his staff. All the stuff that has happened, I've been at CDFA for 2 years. This has all happened within the last 2 years, getting all this up and going, and it's quite an effort with the low amount of funds and staffing they have. So I hope you guys appreciate how hard they've worked. You're volunteers, so you guys understand.
And in conclusion, if I may sum it up, so we are taking a very comprehensive approach. We are focusing more focused research, technical tools which we can provide, education and outreach, addressing the nitrogen management, environmental stewardship, and crop production.
Great. Here's what I'd like to do. We said we would take a break at 10:30. Do you two have time to wait for board questions until after our break? We'll break for about 10, 15 minutes and come back, because I know we have follow-up questions for you. So we'll break at 10:30 right now. We'll come back and no later than 15 minutes, and then we'll have our board questions. And let me let the public know this essentially is our staff presentation on this item. So if anyone wants to speak on this from the public, please submit your speaker cards at this time, because I won't accept any after that, after we begin public comment. Okay? Thank you.
You're doing an excellent job on time management, by the way.
Thank you.
It was like 10:30.
So what I wanted to do was have staff educate the board right now in terms of what's in our ag order. No, you guys stay there.
Okay.
Yeah. They can come to the podium to do this. Maybe Angela?
Chair Young?
Yes.
The question I have for them actually is based on this last slide. And has to do, I just want to clarify the stakeholder feedback process.
Okay.
Could I go ahead and
sure,
do that?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Mann, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I do want to understand the stakeholder involvement. And if you've had representatives from the Central Coast region involved in that, in developing the curriculum and the workshop design, and just, you know, how much of a reach or how much of the curriculum is being really focused on the Tulare for now and ultimately those two workshops that you'll be holding in Central Coast will have that same process that occurs to look have feedback from our area? Is that part of it, or how does that work?
Stakeholder groups which we have is a large number, and we wanted to make sure that there's a representation from the agriculture community, environmental community, and also the regulators as well. So there is a representation from this board on that stakeholder group, and also the local grower associations also are represented on it. And the EJ is also represented on that. We wanted to have more group which are interested, are affected, are impacted one way or other with this nitrate issue. Mm-hmm. And so far as the curriculum is development, it is not focused on one region. It is focused on all regions. And Salinas Valley versus Tulare Lake Basin in the breakout sessions will be equally mm-hmm. managed. So we are concerned about the education and outreach for both areas, mm-hmm. statewide, actually. So that's the focus.
Mm-hmm. I just, in case it isn't clear for folks, these training programs are going to be nitrogen fertilizing materials. They're going to be talking about organic and synthetic nitrogen.
Yeah.
So just so everybody, so we do need to learn more about composting and manure and how that moves and what it does to soil. And so it's not just, I wanted to make that clear.
Mm-hmm. It's not, thank you. It's not only commercial mm-hmm. fertilizer. It is all kind of fertilizing material or sources, even cover crops, what cover crops play a role in the nitrogen management.
With that in mind, are you talking to CalRecycle with the push to divert 75% of organic material from landfills and generate compost? I mean, we're going to be neck deep in compost.
We're in some of those discussions in a variety of ways.
Okay. So what I wanted staff to do for us is just to kind of bring us, refresh our memories on what's in our ag order right now in terms of any requirements we have on growers to manage, control, fertilizer use, test for nitrogen and groundwater. What is it that...
So let me start by saying what was described by CFA here is staff agrees this is a very important step, you know, providing the information they need to the growers so that we can make better nutrient management decisions. That's a critical part of improving water quality. Staff has been involved at some level, as Steve mentioned, the stakeholder group here at the end. So we have been involved. Monica Barcarti, as you know from our staff, is an expert in irrigation nutrient management. She's actually a certified crop advisor and an ag engineer, so she has a lot of expertise to contribute to this process. We hope that we can increase the level of our involvement similar to the Central Valley region because we want to make sure that growers here on the Central Coast are represented and have the tools they need. So to that end, you recall that all growers in the order have some level of irrigation and nutrient management requirements and monitoring reporting. It sort of scales up based upon the tiers. So all growers, mm-hmm. Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3, all have to do a farm plan. That farm plan has to include basic irrigation nutrient management practices. So no matter who you are, you have a farm plan that implements these basic nutrient management practices. So this process informs that as well. As you move up in tiers, Tier 2 and Tier 3 also have to implement specific not specific, but general irrigation agent management practices that they then report out to us. So not only are they doing them, but they're reporting out to us what they're doing. Tier two growers also have to evaluate whether or not they would be high nitrate loading risk growers, and that's based upon crop type and irrigation type and soil type and some other items. That is an item that's currently stayed and will be resolved through a petition, but that is an aspect of how we address nutrient management. So the growers who do in that Tier 2 and Tier 3 group who are high nitrate loading risk would have to also report, track and report their nitrate application annually. So it's not every block, it's not every time, it's an annual reporting of pounds per acre for a specific farm or ranch. And again, that's only for those growers who would be classified as this higher risk, so some subset. So again, this process, the nutrient budgeting specifically, would address how growers are able to do that. Moving up the chain for even higher risk, those Tier 3 growers would also have to develop and implement an irrigation nutrient management plan that is certified by a crop advisor. So it varies specific to this effort here. So their program is training the CCAs and the farm advisors who would be certifying these irrigation nutrient management plans for those Tier 3 growers who are classified as a higher risk to loading nitrogen. So we feel there's a direct relationship between our requirements and the assistance they're providing, and we are very hopeful that we can have additional opportunity to provide input, because what we want to make sure is that the growers have what they need to comply with our requirements. As an example, you know, some of the growers and farm advisors here are asking us, if we go through this training, will that comply with your requirements? We really hope that the answer to that question is yes, because we want to be able to align that. So, for example, the information that comes out of the nutrient budgeting training, we hope will be the same information they can just report to the board, and that would demonstrate their compliance. So we're hoping that we can be involved at the level that is necessary to align our two efforts. Right now, we've had one initial meeting with SCS group. I can't remember the exact group. I think it's an ad hoc stakeholder meeting. And so we're hoping that we can increase our level of involvement in the process.
Okay. You had mentioned that for Tiers 2 and 3, they have to do an irrigation nutrient management plan, but that Tier 3 had to have a certified nutrient management plan?
Everyone has to do a farm plan.
Right.
Okay, and Tier 2 then has to report out the practices that they're implementing from the farm plan. And then the higher risk Tier 3 growers have to do a specific irrigation nutrient management plan, sort of a more robust plan that is then certified by a crop advisor.
Well, what does Tier 2... For Tier 2 and 3 that are not in high risk, they still have to do a nutrient management plan.
What they are doing is nutrient management practices that are part of a farm plan. So it's a more general...
Okay. So if they say that they're following these guidelines that the CDFA has come up with, does that satisfy staff's requirement that they have developed and or are following a nutrient management plan?
I haven't seen the guidelines, so I can't answer that question directly. However, I would assume that some of the guidelines are things like doing your soil, like what you described, doing soil nitrate testing. That's a specific practice that we have on our annual compliance form that a grower can check off. So that's an example of an alignment where they would be doing items in the guidelines that could be used in our reporting to demonstrate progress and compliance.
Okay. Well, it seems like they've thought this out also pretty carefully, and he's been developing some criteria for maximizing efficiency of fertilization and taking into account trying to reduce the impact into groundwater. Seems to me that, if we have some additional requirements other than what has been developed in his guidelines, I guess... After today, maybe I'd like to know about them.
Yeah. I would say that the one item that is less visible to me, I'll put it that way, is that in our irrigation nutrient management plan, we have an effectiveness evaluation that specifically has to do with our goal of protecting groundwater quality and looking at what's leaching below the root zone. And I understand there's a component in the training that's going to be about that. But that's, I would say that's sort of going beyond what's in the traditional irrigation nutrient management plan. So what I've heard so far sounds as if it will align pretty well as we go. The one area that might be where we would go further, for example, would be in looking at how effective is the nutrient management plan at protecting groundwater quality specifically.
Okay. Dr. Hunter.
Can I clarify something?
Sure.
You had just mentioned, I hate it when my brain does this, getting older does this all the time.
Asif, remind me what just happened to my brain.
I just mentioned
leaching,
irrigation and nitrogen management evaluation.
Effectiveness, maybe?
Effectiveness.
Yeah. We're not training people as it goes through the soil. Yeah. We're not doing that yet. One of the things that Dr. Mann pointed out is we're looking at some more research. We've actually, the Secretary has had a couple conversations with the National Science Foundation and some other folks so that we can better understand how nitrogen and nitrates move through the soil column. So we're trying to do the best estimates, but we're not training CCAs to estimate that type of soil movement, nitrogen movement throughout the soil column.
No.
Do you want to clarify?
No, that's true. Our focus is going to be mainly on the management practices, and that's where our focus is going to be. And still, there's a lot of research needs to be done, as Sandy Schubert said, how and how much in certain conditions, certain soil types, certain type of fertilizer irrigation, how much actually goes down. That needs to be still studied.
So you developed your guidelines not with field testing, to actually see what was penetrating beneath the root zone, but it's more of an estimate of what should happen?
Our research and its guideline is based on the inputs and based on the research for optimum use of nitrogen, which would be required by certain crops in certain areas in certain soil type. But more focus is, as I mentioned earlier on, that what are the various factors they need to consider, the grower need to consider when they are budgeting nitrogen. Because that is the change in management practice. That's what we want them to have adopt. But there is information out there still that how much goes down, but we all know whether it goes large quantity or small quantity, but the effort is how can we minimize it? And that's what the effort is going to be. I don't know whether I answered your question directly.
Kind of. Yeah. And let me repeat what I think the answer is to it so that I can be sure we're on the same page.
Yeah.
You have really looked at the inputs into the system,
sure,
but not so much the outputs down below. You have not done field testing to see if those guidelines for lettuce are followed when you say we're going to minimize leaching to groundwater. It's more of an estimate than an actual field-tested
result. I think I have a better understanding of your question, and I will go back to those special RFPs which we just have done. They are going to study in the field conditions for orchards and also in the Salinas Valley for those. They are going to study it in more detail. We do have information in research, but we want to see it in a practical situation as well. So our focus would be part of that RFP and the future going into that direction. So we don't have enough information. At this time, again, whatever we have, and you could see that how much research my scientist has done, read various papers to bring it to that level. That's what we have. And part of that my researcher is going to do is a gap analysis, and that's what he's doing. Where is the gap in the research? Mm. And this would be part of gap. We know it is going to be identified.
Okay.
And that's where our focus would be in future. It's a long-term goal, and it will take long-term effort to get to where we all want to be, which is environmental protection, and especially nitrate leaching up to the groundwater.
That's and again, cool. Different crops and commodities, you're going to have different varying amounts of information when you get back to over 400 commodities. Yeah. So you may have more information on one commodity, one crop, or we may get more information up front on certain things, and it will take time.
And we want to have a research which is done to California conditions, and we all know that there's a lot of diversity not only in the crops but also the soil type within the region, and each soil type behaves differently for nutrients and irrigation practices.
I appreciate the clarification, and my point was simply, we're hoping, we're asking people to follow guidelines that are going to actually improve groundwater. And so this is kind of our best estimate at this point in time is the guidelines, and we're not really sure to what degree we're going to be able to improve groundwater until we start to field test it under field conditions.
But and we do know it's going to improve.
Right. And how much is the question, and are we going to be protective of water quality standards?
Yeah. That is a big question, how much.
All right.
Yeah, question for Angela. You mentioned that for Tier 2 and Tier 3, reporting on the practices, I lost my place too. Reporting on their high risk, the evaluation of high risk, is currently under stay. So would that also then affect Tier 3? Because they're not required. Is that also linked then to the stay?
The state board used an interesting method to evaluate the items that were stayed. So the two things that are predicated on the nitrate loading risk are the total nitrogen reporting and also the irrigation nutrient management plans that are certified by the crop advisor. So, but the actual requirement to do those things has not been stayed.
Okay.
So the question, I think, pending is what will determine who has to do those things.
Right.
The stayed requirement is that it's these high risk. It's based upon this risk analysis.
Okay. So, but at this time, I'm trying to understand where we are with implementation. Are those elements then not moving forward until the state board issues its determination of those petitions?
That's correct.
Okay.
And as you might recall, the justification they gave for staying those items were they would not become due until after they thought they would decide, right? The nitrate loading risk analysis is actually due this October. So that's where we're going to get into some time conflict, is if we can't resolve that issue before October of 2013.
Right. And the state board order did extend deadlines, but on those elements, that did not have to do with the risk assessment.
That's correct.
Okay. And then the Tier 3 operators, do they have to do a certified irrigation and nutrient management plan? They have to move forward with that now, or are they on hold? That's the other side of the coin.
Those items were not stayed, so they don't have to report out on their progress until 2014 and 2015. So. Mm-hmm. We could assume that they're working towards those things, but really that would not be known until they have to report out on them, which is later.
Okay.
But those items were not stayed.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Last board questions. Mr. Johnston?
Actually, I had some kind of overall comments on the presentations, and I can hold that if what we're doing is asking staff questions.
Until we are what, done with the staff questions?
You tell me, Mr. Chair.
Well, this is just a status report.
Okay.
So, I mean,
I have a couple comments.
Yeah.
One, I really Yes, I tried not to let my feelings be hurt that you consulted with the Central Valley Board way earlier in the process than with us. But I'm glad you're here.
We were ahead of them, that's why.
I'm glad you're here. And I am hopeful that there'll be more close work between our staff and your working group to be able to really make this align with our order. I have to say, you know, it was kind of a conundrum when we were passing the ag waiver and requiring all of this nitrogen budgeting and such, and really understanding, and the more I learn about it, the more I understand how inexact that is and how our understanding of that stuff is still developing. And it was kind of scary to be requiring something that is really still in development, but it was also obvious that it was so important a piece of the puzzle that we really had to move on it. So I'm really heartened to see the work that you guys are doing to put together a program in place to really train people to work with farmers on this. I feel like in some ways you just stuck out a net, and that's good. While it would be nice to be able to simply take the compliance with the guidelines as compliance with the with our requirements and in effect turn the guidelines into regulation, not only I think does that make the CDFA nervous because of their role in relation to farmers, but I think the guidelines are something different than regulation. They're a work in progress, and they're extremely site specific. But I do think that once again, it's really important the work that you guys are doing, because we certainly are going to be, you know, I suspect going forward, looking to make sure that. That the folks that we're regulating are really paying attention to the best science around and to those guidelines. Finally, you know, it strikes me that we're in the part of the stayed portion of our ag waiver requiring certified crop advisors to approve nitrogen budgets. And depending on what comes out of the state board's process, it seems like at some future point we might wish to look to modifying that to specify that they be certified crop advisors who have gone through this training. Now, understanding that currently we're requiring that in October, which may or may not happen depending on what the state board does, and you won't have turned anybody out of the program then. I get that. But. It seems like that may really make sense for us to look at down the road, that they not just be CCAs, but CCAs that have actually, once there's a pool of those, that have actually been through the training.
Go ahead.
So the Central Valley, that's their requirement, but something just to think about, there are RCDs, there are other folks. So the way the Central Valley wrote theirs is leaving open that other training programs, if they were comparable, would comply. For instance, say citrus wants to do a specific training program to citrus, and it's robust and meets the obligations, the board or the EO, however you wanted it, could approve that also. Or if we later down the road tried to develop training programs for individual farmers. I guess my point is that this is a tool we're developing. We wouldn't want to shut down other tools that were equally valid and have people only rely on ours.
Okay, that concludes everything. I'd like to thank Undersecretary Schubert and Dr. Mons for taking the time to give us this presentation. I think it was really helpful, really educational. It helps for us to see what you're doing and in terms of what we're doing and requiring. And I'm happy to get your opinion that, you know, even if these guidelines are followed, we should see an improvement, at least in water quality. And that's where we're at this point in time, is trying to get things moving in the direction of improvement. So I'm glad that you're doing the work you're doing.
Thank you, and I want to thank the board and the staff and everything, and I really want to thank Dr. Mann and his staff. They've done the yeoman's work on all this, and they've done an amazing job.
Good. So look forward to another report or presentation in the future at some time on anything else? And two workshops, right.
Two workshops, yeah, that's.
And the mobile training units, we'd like two or three of those.
I got it, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
If I may, I would like to thank Mr. Chairman and the board for the opportunity, and this is what I do. I prepare material and share and get feedback and try to improve as much as we can. And regarding Mr. Johnson, comment about working together with the Central Valley. It has been CDFA's always desire and intention to work with all the boards, and I must say under Mr. Harris's leadership, we are communicating more frequently, and that's only going to improve.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. This concludes item 15, so...